From WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Science is at the heart of some of our nation's most contentious debates, from climate change to abortion. Of course, science is only part of the equation when it comes to making policy decisions on these issues. Now, the Museum of Science in Boston is asking visitors to take on some of these tough questions that blend science and values. Questions like, should scientists use genetically modified mosquitoes to control disease? Or should parents know the genome of their unborn or newborn child? Hear about that exhibit and how the Museum of Science is using it to address the current controversy over football and concussions. Also, Alzheimer's disease affects some 50 million people worldwide, but there are only a handful of drugs currently available to treat the disease. There are, however, 126 more drugs in clinical trials. A new report from the Alzheimer's Drug Discovery Foundation tracks their progress. Hear what the prospects are for treating Alzheimer's. First, though, there have been 10 mass shootings already this year. There were 6 last year, 7 the year before. Each of these shootings sparks conversations about what leads to these devastating events. The role of gun laws, of mental health care, political polarization, and, over the past week, domestic violence. Well, today we're going to talk about another possible factor, social contagion. In 2015, researchers published an analysis showing that mass shootings showed signs of being contagious, with one shooting leading to more. Sherry Towers is a research professor with the Simon A. Levin Mathematical, Computational, and Modeling Sciences Center at Arizona State University. She was the lead author of that study. Sherry, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
It feels like mass shootings are going viral, to use the colloquial term. I mean, that they started off as something almost unheard of and are now completely pervasive. But then I looked at a few data sets to kind of try to fact check that perception. And some of those data sets show an increase. Others, like the data that you used for that 2015 study, not so much. So where does it stand in terms of even having the data that we need to look at trends in mass shootings in this country?
I think that you have to look at the time frame that you're speaking of. So if you were to go back, say, 50 years, yes, it would appear that mass shootings are more common today. But I think there's multiple factors at play beyond just the contagion that we found in our studies. And certainly in the last 10 to 15 years, the issue of firearms, Second Amendment rights have become much more prevalent in American society. And so there has been record sales of firearms, particularly in the last 10 years. And one of the things we found in our study was that it wasn't just contagion playing a role, but prevalence of firearm ownership was also a significant factor in the state rates of mass killings.
Let's talk about that contagion factor that you looked at. I mean, from a mathematical perspective, as opposed to, say, a biological perspective, where we know what contagion means in terms of diseases, what does social contagion look like in mathematical terms? Is it just a, you know, rapid increase in the frequency or the occurrence of something, or are there other patterns that you look for to find out if something is socially contagious?
Well, the way it manifests itself in the data is what you see is unusual bunching together in time of these kinds of events, more so than you would expect if they were just kind of randomly, uniformly distributed in time. And so when we looked at the data, we had three different sources of data. We looked at mass killings, where at least 4 people were killed, school shootings. And then we also looked at mass shootings, which is 3 or more people shot, not necessarily killed. And that latter group is actually very common in the United States, more so than people might realize. It's so common, actually, that it rarely makes it past the local news. It tends to be things like mass killings where you have a high casualty count that make the national news or international news. And what we found is when we looked at those 3 data sets, the mass killings that received a lot of media attention and school shootings did show evidence of that unusual bunching together in time that's the hallmark of contagion. But when we looked at the much more frequent mass shootings that had low casualty count, we found no evidence of contagion in those. And that's what led us to hypothesize that media perhaps might be playing a role as a vector of this social contagion of mass killings.
Before we talk about the role of media and how this contagion takes place, I'm curious what made you even think to look at this question? What made you start to think that mass shootings might be contagious? And were you at all surprised to see that they were?
So at our center, we have a background in modeling of diseases. This is certainly something that we have done a lot of in our research program. And in January of 2014, I collaborate with groups at various universities, and one of those groups is at Purdue University. And I was due to have a meeting with researchers there, and the meeting was canceled that day because there was a school shooting on campus. A student walked into a classroom and shot another student dead and then walked out. We never did find out why he did it, because he committed suicide while in jail. But it occurred to me that day that that was the third school shooting I had heard of in about a 10-day period in the news. And even though these events are much more common in the U.S. than in any other developed country, it struck me that that seemed like an unusual bunching together in time. So it made me curious as to whether or not there might be contagion evident in these events. And so I talked to my colleagues. And so what we did is we applied contagion models to this research topic. And we didn't know what we were going to find, to be honest with you, but we were curious. And so that's why we embarked upon the study.
I'm talking with mathematician Sherry Towers of Arizona State University about the phenomenon of social contagion and mass shootings. Sherry, as you've already alluded to, there are a lot of different factors that go into any one person going out and committing one of these acts. And we hear a lot about those in the media. And in particular, there's a lot of talk about the role of gun laws, gun access. The New York Times this past week wrote that an ever-growing body of research consistently reaches the same conclusion. The only variable that can explain the high rate of mass shootings in America is its astronomical number of guns. You looked at just how big the contagion effect is compared to the gun effect. So how important is the social contagion aspect?
So we found that about 20 to 30% of mass killings appear to have been inspired by a previous event. We can't point to any one specific mass killing and say, yes, this one was inspired, unless the killer actually left a manifesto that said, yes, I was fascinated with Columbine or I was fascinated with Newtown. So we can't point to any specific one. It's when you look at the data as an aggregate that you see these unusual patterns that are the hallmark of contagion. And so this copycat effect has been suspected for a very long time, that these things actually do inspire copycat killers. But we were the first to quantify it, and that's what was unique about our study.
You've also already pointed out that not all gun violence, that especially when there isn't media coverage, you don't see that contagion effect. It really seems like the media is the infectious agent, if you will, in this social contagion. Mm-hmm. Do you see anything unique in the media environment in the United States that might help account for the disproportionate number of these mass killings in this country? Or do you think it is kind of this contagion effect could be seen anywhere?
I think that I like to use the analogy of Canada versus the U.S. I actually was born in Canada. I immigrated to the U.S. about 19 years ago. And I know that in Canada, that the vast majority of Canadians actually are fully exposed to American news stories. In fact, many of them will watch American news in addition to the Canadian news. And so when these kind of events occur in America, Canadians are just as exposed to the media regarding the events as Americans are. And yet, Canada does not have nearly the problem with public mass killings as the U.S. does. The difference between the U.S. and Canada is the prevalence of firearm ownership that is likely one of the main reasons that Canada does not have the same problem that the U.S. does. And you can buy firearms in Canada. It's not that it's impossible to buy them. You can buy them. It's just that the vetting process is much more rigorous, and there are strict limits on magazine capacity in Canada. And that's a huge difference between Canada and the U.S.
So there's the same spreading of information, perhaps the same spreading of the idea, but not the same ability to then go act on it and actually carry out a shooting.
Exactly.
You've also looked at internet memes or internet information that goes viral, that is contagious like this. Do you think that the internet and social media, which we love to, you know, hold up as the boogeyman for all things evil at this point, is that playing a role in making these events more contagious, or is, you know, traditional broadcast mass media enough?
I think that it's very difficult to quantify the role that social media might be playing in the spreading of this kind of information. It certainly is true that recent studies have shown that the majority of Americans actually get their news through social media. So social media is very likely playing a role. It's just difficult to quantify how much social media attention is being paid to a particular topic, but other than perhaps looking at tweets. There was certainly an analysis that we did back when there was the Ebola outbreak in the U.S., where we looked at news media stories that appeared in the traditional news media on the outbreak in the United States specifically, of which consisted 5 cases. And so there was almost no Ebola spreading, but yet it dominated the airwaves for a period of around an entire month, where it was 24/7 Ebola coverage. And what we found was when we looked at the number of news media stories in the traditional mainline news media, and then we looked at people's response and what they were tweeting about regarding Ebola, we found that actually there was a really significant influence of the media on what people then were tweeting. And it was actually almost frightening, the influence that traditional news media had on people's activities on social media. So it is clear that what happens on social media can be driven by what people are seeing in the mainline news media.
I'm talking with Sherry Towers. She's a mathematician at Arizona State University, and we're talking about social contagion. Sherry, as you've alluded to, mass shootings aren't the only phenomenon that can be contagious like this. And of course, the whole phrase going viral is kind of an internet term. I'm curious, this Me Too hashtag, the conversation about sexual abuse that has really spiraled in the past few weeks. I mean, that seems like a strong candidate for something that is contagious in this sense. You've looked at social media memes that are contagious. Are there any commonalities in what catches on and spreads?
Well, when we look at, for instance, Twitter data or people's internet searches related to a topic, when we're particularly talking about memes, what we find is that the temporal pattern in the popularity of certain topics, when we compare it to what we see in sort of the temporal patterns that we see in a disease outbreak and the number of cases, the shapes of those distributions are really, really similar. And so that points to there being again, a contagion aspect, and of course, you even have it in the term we use when something goes viral, that there is this contagion aspect in the spread of information on social media, and where topics can become very popular, and then over time, people lose interest in that topic, and it starts to wane, and we really do see that in the data.
In the case, perhaps, of the Me Too hashtag or some of these internet memes, they may actually be good things that we're perfectly happy to have go viral and spread. But in the case of things like mass shootings, you've got to wonder, is there a way to stop this? Is there, to continue the analogy, is there a vaccine or a treatment for social contagion?
So when the FBI has identified 7 stages of active shooter events, beginning with basically ideation, where people get the idea to do something. And clearly, if you have, that's where things like mental health treatment can come in, where basically you prevent people from having the mental issues that would cause them to be ideated in the first place. But it also can be things like how media chooses to cover these kinds of events if they are less sensationalized, for instance. That can help with the ideation. People then, once they're ideated, move on to planning and preparation. And these activities would be, for instance, buying firearms and equipping themselves in order to do the event. Near the last stage is where the approach and implementation of the active shooter events. And this is where the perpetrator is approaching the place where they're going to do this and where they actually start shooting. And this is where the idea of the good guy with the gun can be a deterrent to these kinds of things, or basically, if not a deterrent, at least lower the casualty counts by intervening early in one of these events. What we find when we look at diseases is that the earlier you are able to intervene in a contagious process, as this disease is spreading, the better outcome you will have in actually controlling the disease. And so in this case, if we can intervene in those early stages through better access to mental health and through better control of firearms actually getting into the hands of the people who are ideated with these kinds of ideas to perpetrate these acts, that is likely far more efficacious than relying on measures that are at the very end of that whole chain where you're relying on a good guy with a gun to intervene.
That's Sherry Towers. She is a research professor at the Simon A. Levin Mathematical, Computational, and Modeling Sciences Center at Arizona State University. Sherry, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Up next, progress toward treating Alzheimer's disease. Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.